Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. It is a credit union, which means it belongs to you. Its money stays here and with you. So www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org and click on their banner. All the information will be right there. And on our way to our conversation, I'll remind you that a tradition continues with the second annual WEAA Gospel Grace Benefit Concert featuring the legendary Lady Tremaine Hawkins. Also performing will be Ernest Pugh, Wilmington's Chester Mass Choir, and the Morgan State University Choir. That's this Sunday, October the 30th at 6 p.m. at the Murphy Fine Arts Center. Ticket information at Murphy's Box Office, Ticketmaster.com, Ticketmaster Outlets, or 410-547-SEAT. And presented by the Morgan's MBA program and public radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And we have with us today folks who are participating in a conference that is taking place this weekend on fair development, on alternative way to think about development. We've had many arguments and discussions on the show over the last 19 years about development and what it means, whether it was the development of EBDI on the east side that displaced hundreds of families for centers that were never built, or whether it was, I'm going to get in trouble for saying that, I know, but I get a lot of phone calls and letters, and when I see the guy tomorrow night, I say, why'd you say that about us? Well, we can come on the air and talk about that another day. Or whether it's Inner Harbor development and subsidies being given, taxes not being paid for developers who wanted to build. Are there better ways, people argue? One of those groups that argues a lot about that being a better way are the United Workers, that are an organization of low-wage workers in the Inner Harbor that are black and Latino and white that have come together to fight for a better way of life. And they're always doing things besides demonstrating alternative kind of programs to bring the message to their people and to the larger population. And this weekend, there's a fair development conference taking place that they are one of the sponsors of, among many organizations that are bringing people from all over the country and all over the globe, from Brazil and Dominican Republic, that we'll talk about, to talk about different ways of development that we can consider as a society, as a state, as a community. And we did invite, by the way, the Baltimore Development Corporation to join us in a dialogue with others around fair development, but they couldn't find anybody in the organization who could join us for a conversation, which might have been a different one today had they joined us. But we do have with us today Ashley Huffnagel, who is a leadership organizer with United Workers, Raymond Scott, who's a former harbor worker and a member of the Human Rights Council of the United Workers, a man who has worked hard all of his life, experienced homelessness, and is fighting for the rights of other workers. He's in the studio with us. Sarah Weintraub joins us by phone. She's a member and organizer of the Vermont Worker Center, which led a successful campaign for a single-payer health care system in Vermont. And Marion Kramer joins us once again as well. She's a longtime advocate and organizer for civil rights, welfare rights, human rights, and political rights, and she's former chair of the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization. All welcome. Good to have you with us once again.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Marion and Sarah, you're both there, right?
What did you say?
Okay, just making sure you're all on the phone. It's good. It's good to have you here.
So, yes, that's it. Thank you.
And we'll see you both tomorrow night here. But let me start with Ashley. And to give our listeners a sense of what is going to happen, what this Fair Development Conference means.
Yeah, the Fair Development Conference is going to be a pretty amazing event, and it's really well-timed right now with this country. We see this explosion of these Occupy movements across the country and in Baltimore. And, you know, people are frustrated. You know, they're seeing this wealth inequality, the 1% that are controlling so much wealth while pretty much 99% of the people are struggling to meet their basic needs. And so this conference is a place for community organizers, labor organizers, academics to come together to share struggles, strategies, and solutions for how we want to develop our communities. What's the sort of economic development model and the sort of economy that we want that's going to really respect people's human rights, that's going to be sustainable, and that is going to maximize public benefits. And it's not about, you know, our public resources being, you know, privatized or being going to the wealthiest 1%, but a way, creating a world where it's a vibrant world in which all of us can live with dignity.
So I'd like to just go around the room for a moment. The digital room across the country here, as well as the room inside the studio, to talk about what all of you kind of think about when you hear this word fair development and what that means, and invite our listeners to join us at 410-319-8888 as the conversation unfolds, because I want to get very concrete about it. Marian Kramer, let me start with you. I mean, you're coming down to speak tomorrow night as a keynote speaker at this conference. And you've been in the struggle for your whole life. So I'm curious, what is this? What are you coming down to say, and what does this notion and idea of fair development mean to you?
Well, that we have gotten to a point in this society that we have the ability to produce for everybody, and that no one in this country should be going homeless, nor should they be hungry, nor should they lack public education, quality type of education. You know, we have the right, I mean, we have the situation that is facing us now, that no one should be owning the means of production. I'm talking about, you know, as far as the technology that is being used now. It should be for the benefit of society as a whole. So, you know, we should be sharing all that. And that's what I'm looking at this conference as being the starting stage to begin to discuss this, to understand this, and to go out and fight for this. I'm so proud of these young people that have been out saying they're a part, that we are all a part of the 99%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are, you know, the 99% should be able to enjoy life and not barely survive out here. So that's what I'm looking at in this conference this weekend, getting an understanding where we are and where we have to go. And we have the objective situation that can provide for that at this point.
It's Sarah Weintraub.
Hi, thanks.
Hi, welcome.
For having us. Yeah, so I'm from the Vermont Worker Center, and up here in Vermont we see a lot of the same issues as everybody's talking about. You know, it's a more rural state up here, but we've got the same thing where we've got development often, you know, traditionally for people means, you know, we're going to build new tourism infrastructure, or we're going to build, you know, it doesn't, for us as well, it means really fair development means investing in the things that our communities need, in public goods. Healthcare is what we've been fighting for, but we also fight for livable wage jobs, for education. You know, we want to see the people who are most affected by this development making the decisions about where the money should go and what development means in the first place. So it's also just about democracy and having a voice in those decisions about development.
And from your perspective here as in Baltimore, Raymond Scott, why are you involved in this, and what is your perspective on what this means?
Well, I'm involved in it because, you know, it's the right thing to be involved in, because, you know, I'm about the people, and I want to see people grow just like I want to grow. You know, fair development is like she just explained. You know, we want fair, you know, employment, fair health care, you know what I mean? Basically, fair equality, to be respected with dignity, you know, and be productive, you know what I mean, instead of feeling unproductive, you know. So the fair development, to me, is a good cause. You know what I mean? That's why I'm involved in it. That's why I'm a member of the Human Rights Council, you know what I mean, of the United Workers, because, you know, we're about changing these things, you know, so that people can feel good about themselves, you know what I mean, in their situations.
Could you, if I might, because I heard a little bit about you before you came here, from some folks, just to give the people a sense of the people coming to this conference and who people are and what they represent. And would you mind just telling a little about your own story, about what got you involved? You were an employee for a while at one of the places in the Inner Harbor, correct?
Yes. I was employed for a few minutes at Dick's Last Resort down in the harbor. You know, the experience was, for me, it was traumatic. You know, I worked there as a dishwasher, And being working at the dishwasher, I was also tasked with a lot of other jobs that basically wasn't being paid for. You know what I mean? So it was like, you're going to do these jobs, you know what I'm saying, with the pay that I'm giving you, or else. You know, so what happened, you know, I went through a few changes in my life. You know, I couldn't get them to coincide with, like, my parole officer at the time. When I was on parole, you know, it couldn't coincide with it. So I had to either do that or lose my job. So I choose not to go back to prison. So I lost my job. That was one of the senses of downsizing, you know what I mean? So, you know, in doing that, I became homeless. I lost my home, you know what I'm saying? And it's been like a struggle for me, you know? And that's how I got involved with United Workers. You know, they helped me get through this struggle, you know, and helped me find solutions, you know, to better me. And solutions to help better everyone else.
I mean, because I mean, the what you went through, as someone who has been inside and come back out trying to make a new life, is not just the story of Raymond Scott. It's the story of tens of thousands of men and women who are in your position.
Right. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's like they say, you do or you don't. You know, it's like a catch 52. You know, and unless we can get these developers and, you know, the organizations that work for them to coincide with us to help us keep a job, we gonna always be down.
And when you say that, you're talking about when you just people get a sense, because I think your story is emblematic of stories of lots of people that I've met and known, right? That you had a job, paid whatever it was an hour, probably not a lot.
No, it wasn't a lot. Definitely wasn't a lot.
And so you had obligations because you were on parole to meet certain places and be certain places,
right?
Or you'd be sent back to the joint, right?
Right. You know, so, you know, couldn't get the employer to coincide with that. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't even get them to coincide with the employee. Because employers, you know, at the time, he's like, you know, this is what I want you to do. You know, you want this job. You know what I mean? You're going to do it this way. So I had to make a decision. You know what I'm saying? I want to have a job, you know what I'm saying? Because I got to sustain me and my family. You know what I mean? But also got to do what, at that time, as the world used, conform to do what I supposed to do. You know? So nobody wants to go back. You know what I'm saying? And if they do, they don't make sense to me. You know? But I choose to do what I supposed to do, and it caused me to lose my job.
Now, let's jump in here and kind of get some concrete. Then I want to talk about some of the other people who are coming in from Brazil, what they're bringing, other people that you're going to be doing this conference. But when I listen to you with Raymond Scott talk about the situation, and you look at in Inner Harbor or any of the development you have, like you have in Detroit, or you've got maybe also in Vermont. There's a very different state, Vermont, but a lot of similar things happen. But in Detroit, so how should in fair development, from your perspectives, the government and industry respond to tens of thousands of Raymond's compatriots and Raymond in how we develop and what we do? What's the response so that doesn't happen? That's the question I want to ask you. What is, from your perspective, should be done that changes that paradigm, changes that way of doing things? You can start, Raymond. Then I'm going to go to Marion and over to Ashley and then Sarah.
I think it should be where, as though, you know, that they conform to our needs. You know what I'm saying? You know, that they help us to stay productive. You know what I mean? Instead of trying to and force us to be productive in their way. You know what I'm saying? In other words, help me be productive and sustain what I'm supposed to sustain, but with respect and with dignity. You know what I'm saying? Not because you know that I got to do this because of this. You know what I'm saying? And use that as a leverage against me. You know, don't use it as a leverage against me. You know what I'm saying? Help me better what I need to do and help others better. You know what I mean? So that we can stay focused. Because a lot of times, you know, when we can't stay focused, a lot of us end up back because the employer don't want to help us keep the job. You know what I'm saying? Or they disrespecting us on the job, or they not paying us enough on the job. You know what I'm saying? So we fall back into the ways. But we got those who don't fall back into the ways. But we still have to have someone that's there to say, okay, I'm going to help you do this. Is this what you need me to do to help you keep this job? This is what I'm going to do. You know what I'm saying? Instead of saying, you're going to do this my way or lose the job. You know what I mean?
So Marion, let me just get you to jump in here, but then return to Ashley, because Detroit in many ways is like a sister city in this post-industrial era where millions of people have been thrown out of the way we used to live. So what is that vision to you about how what that means, to have fair development so that in our society? How does that work?
The whole question of fair development is the fact that the government should not be representing the interests of the corporation right now. Everything that is going on in Michigan right now and throughout the country, the government is working for them at our expense. You know, in several of our cities, right, there's a Public Act 4, emergency manager. The governor appoints an emergency manager to take over the city, saying that they ain't financially stable, so therefore he sends in this dictator. They have the right to sell off all our access in a particular city. They have the right to fire the mayor, fire the city council, and tell you that you will not be voting for those particular offices. And we have lived up under that here in Highland Park. It was Public Act 72 at one time. But he even took it further, this present governor, Republican governor, where they added the fact that they can appoint a financial manager over the school system. And what do we have? Are these financial managers doing anything for the benefit? When you talk about having a fair situation for the benefit of all? No. What he's doing is getting private contracts. We're seeing schools suffer out here. They're helping to set up things in the state apparatus. The governor is at this particular stage, given the increase in unemployment, he moved to get a time limitation of 48 months for people to be able to be on welfare, and moving to include that certain disabled folks also. Now, when I look at the question of fair share, this is what we need. We need a government that not only lay a plan out here with our input that we're producing for the benefit of society as whole, not to bail out these banks and the people that have robbed from the banks in the first place be the ones that end up reaping the benefits from them. And our money went to bail them out. We own these banks right now. The vast public, the public at this particular time own these banks because we have more public funds than they have than their funds, but yet they're getting away with murder. If it had been you or I, and we took something from the bank, they'd be trying to put us up under the jail. But no, these people are able to walk away and enjoy life. The same thing with AIG. They're the insurance companies and stuff like that. They say that we can't have universal health care in this country. Yes, we can. We own AIG. And AIG should be working for our interest and not for the interest of these insurance corporations. So when we talk about fair share, we should have universal health care. We should have public schools that our children can be safe in and enjoying. We should have the benefit for people to people like the governor here cannot eliminate public assistance if we need a safety net. No one should be living below the poverty level in this country. I mean, it's criminal that 1% of the total population is living at the expense of 99%. That is criminal. And when I talk about fair share, we start from the bottom and say the first thing we're going to do is move to eliminate poverty in this country. That means we're going to start taxing the rich. That means that these corporations are not going to be able to take advantage of these loopholes that the government let them get away with. That means that we're going to have a better future for these children. Then we're talking about something.
So in the world that we face every day here, say in Baltimore City, Ashley, how do you see that taking place? I mean, what is the shape of fair development mean in developing our economy and developing our communities in ways that you see we're not doing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what Marion was talking about was happening in Detroit with these emergency finance managers.
Right.
I mean, this is the same thing that's going on in Baltimore. You know, how is it that the 1% are able to control, you know, so much wealth? It's because there's a lack of democratic participation by ordinary people in decisions that affect their lives. And so we have something called the Baltimore Development Corporation, which is supposed to be this public agency that takes public money and just funnels it to these private developers for private gain. And so, you know, meanwhile, while you know, Raymond is being evicted from his house, you know, Cordish is asking one of the Harbor developers, Inner Harbor developers, that's a $1 billion company, the Cordish company, is asking the Baltimore Development Corporation for a $3 million rent break. This is outrageous. Cordish didn't even pay any rent on the power plant last year. So what does that even mean? You know, and this is, you know, they have this meeting, the Baltimore Development Corporation and Cordish, they have a closed-door meeting. They even kicked the media out of it. You know, so people, workers, ordinary people, you know, residents are not able to have a voice in these decisions that affect our lives and decisions around how public resources should be used. And this is outrageous. We're talking about the heart of our city, the Inner Harbor, where millions of dollars have been invested. And what do we have to show for it? A poverty zone, a place that keeps people in a cycle of poverty. And, you know, it's you know, enough is enough.
Now, if I understand...
And too much thinks.
Too much what, Marion?
Enough is enough and too much thinks.
Sarah Weintraub, what's your vision of how that works? I mean, I guess, you know, we think of where you live in Vermont as being this kind of haven of progressive freedom, but tell us a little bit of that story.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I think that's sort of a common thought about Vermont, but we are not free from these problems up here at all. And I think that it's risky that we often think that, you know, quiet rural states like Vermont are really any different. You know, we have a lot of people here who are struggling too, and our struggles are really, we see as totally the same. You know, people here are struggling to heat their homes, to feed their kids, to keep a roof over their heads. And we're dealing with, you know, even some really, really parallel situations. You know, we have workers in the Inner Harbor who are employed seasonally, right, for really low wages. We have the same thing here with our ski industry. And you know, and it's the same situation where tons of public money and tax breaks get given to that industry to, you know, as economic development. And at the same time, we're told year after year, that there's just not enough, you know, for affordable housing, and there's just not enough for mental health services, or definitely not enough for universal health care, is what we were told. But, you know, when we think of fair development, like I said before, we think of the people making those decisions about where we're going to develop, what we're going to develop. Are we going to develop more ski mountains, or are we going to develop a community health center? You know, for us, fair development is really the same struggle, I think, and it's just investing in the basic needs of our communities and the well-being of each other. And, you know, especially right now, our whole state just got destroyed by a hurricane, by a tropical storm, Irene. So I don't know if folks heard much about what happened in Vermont with that, but, you know, we were really decimated, and we had some serious issues before that storm hit as far as affordable housing and our roads and access to health care and jobs, and now, you know, we really are in a tough situation, and we're being told that we're going to have to. I mean, our governor just announced that we're cutting 4% across the board in all state spending. So right as people are in the situation that they most need support, and we most need to invest in. I mean, hundreds of people lost their homes, which for us is a lot. We're a very small state, so. Hundreds, even thousands of families losing their homes is a lot of people, and at the same time, we're told we're going to cut spending to affordable housing so that we can afford flood relief. You know, that's not fair development to us when we're told that. But at the same time, like Marion and Ashley and everybody had, and Raymond, had, everybody's been saying, you know, the 1% gets to do whatever they want.
Well, I'm going to come down to some brass tacks when we come back from this break. I'm going to hear about what the Brazilian people are coming to town and what example they're bringing to. This conference, and really push from what I hear from the developer side, what they say has to be done in an economy that's now more of a tourist economy. here in the city as opposed to an industrial economy? What are our alternatives and how do we get there? You can join us here at 410-319-8888. We're talking about the Fair Development Conference, people coming from across the globe to Baltimore. It's not one of those conferences that I think the city is touting very much happening, but it's happening here in Baltimore, people coming from across the country and across the globe to talk about a different way of thinking about how our economies and communities can grow. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll be right back to continue this conversation. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Even for second-time homebuyers, there are great you can call 1-800-638-7781 and to talk about buying a home in the city of Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We are talking about fair development and a fair development conference taking place in Baltimore this weekend, starting tomorrow night, Friday night, and Saturday. People coming from across the country and across the globe to attend this conference about how we can do things in a different way when it comes to developing our communities, our economy, and our cities. Ashley Huffnagel is with us in studio. She's a leadership organizer with United Workers, one of the groups that is spearheading this conference. Raymond Scott's with us in the studio. He's a former harbor worker and a member of the Human Rights Council of United Workers. Sarah Weintraub is with us. She's a member and organizer of the Vermont Workers Center, which led the successful campaign for a single-payer health care system in Vermont. Marion Kramer joins us once again as well. She's from Detroit. She's a longtime advocate and organizer for civil rights and welfare rights and former chair of the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization. The number here is 410-319-8888. And Sheila, you're on the air. Sheila, welcome.
Hello.
Hi, welcome. You're on the air, Sheila.
Okay. What I want to do, my question is to the lady, how the 99% has the right they should be the ones that make policy. But how are they going to enforce the law? That's what I want to know. I'm going to take my question off the air.
How are the people going to enforce the law?
To enforce what they want done.
That's a great question, and there are a lot of ladies in the room, so I don't care which lady wants to take this first. How does that happen?
I think it's going to take a social movement. It's going to take a broad social movement of people united across color lines, language barriers, everything, to come together to really be a powerful force that will keep the resources in the hands of the people and serving the benefits of the people. I don't think, just passing a law is going to do anything. Clearly at the Inner Harbor, there are, some basic labor laws that are being violated, minimum wage laws that are being violated. You know, there's systematic wage theft at the harbor. There's a law on the books against that. But what it's going to take and what it is taking is, workers being organized across the harbor and demanding justice and bringing visibility to these human rights abuses.
Marianne, how would you respond to Sheila?
And I agree wholeheartedly with that. We're going to have to understand that the vast majority of us are part of the working class. Be we working, unemployed, have mental or physical problems and stuff like that. And constantly the crisis that is, the economic crisis out here is being constantly placed on our backs, where other folks are making they say that the government is broke. It's obvious it's not broke, because every time one of these corporations need a bailout, they get bailed out. So what do we have to do? We have to get out here, just like you listening to the radio, just like the conference this weekend, and began to understand that there are other people that are beginning to think like we are thinking. And we're going to have to organize, educate, and pull people into this movement. But we have to understand also that their objective needs going to push them into this movement. It's criminal for folks to be, I'm going to say it again, here in Michigan, 40,000 people are losing their welfare checks, and they are not giving them jobs in place of that. 40,000 families, I'm saying, which could affect 30,000 children no more. So how do we got to organize and let and just like these young people are doing, and putting our lives on the line to make sure that we do have a better society for that. We put our lives on the line during the civil rights movement, and it's always easy for somebody to put their life on the line for this capitalist government that is taking place, go over in Iraq and other places to fight in the interest of them. I'm talking about the rich folks here, for them to be able to get that oil and stuff. And then when you come back here, most of the soldiers that are coming back here are homeless, don't even, they've been foreclosed on, a lot of them are ill and can't even get the necessary medical help. So how are we going to protect ourselves? We're going to begin to organize ourselves to protect ourselves among the working class.
So let me, a couple of things that came up here that I want to kind of cover. And folks, please join us at 410-319-8888. I want to talk about the Brazilians and what they're bringing, but you said something fairly controversial just a second ago, Ashley, which is not surprising, but which when you said that there is systemic wage theft, systemic wage theft going on in Inner Harbor businesses towards employees. What does that mean? What does systemic wage theft mean?
Yeah, wage theft takes place in lots of different ways. Essentially, it's not being paid for all the hours worked. So, for instance, at the Cheesecake Factory, you know, it's workers being punched out in their clocks while they're still on the clock, and this happening multiple times a week. So, you know, that money adds up. It's workers at Hooters that are being paid on these debit cards that every time they go to an ATM, they can't draw all their money out. So they have to do it in multiple times. And each time they have a transaction fee that's like $4 to $8 each time they draw money out. You know, when people are making a poverty wage, that's around what that transaction fee is, you know, they're getting their wages stolen. That's an hour gone from, you know, of their wages all the time. You know, same with servers. You know, servers get, you know, they get a lower wage than most workers because they get tips. But if their tips don't, you know, bring their wage up to the minimum wage, the employer is supposed to pay the difference. Well, that often doesn't happen. And so during the winter time, you know, servers are working way below minimum wage.
So I just want to
The police is not out there saying, "I'm going to arrest you for robbing the workers." The workers are going to be able. The workers are going to have to begin to understand that, and that we don't have to continuously lay down and take this kind of stuff.
410-319-8888. Join us here as we talk about Fair Development, the conference taking place this weekend. As I said, folks coming in from around the globe, and some of the people coming in from around the globe are coming in from Brazil. Now, talk a bit about the folks coming in from Brazil and what they're bringing here.
Yeah, one of the keynote speakers is Janaína Stronzac, and she's from the Landless People's Movement. Some people know them as the MST. They're a pretty righteous group from Brazil. They're a peasant organization, and they're the largest social movement in the Southern Hemisphere. They've organized and they've acquired land. Talk about occupations. They've occupied land and gotten land back for people who, you know, depend on the land for their own survival. I think that part of this conference, we're seeing the connections between, you know, our public and collective resources, whether it's, you know, in Brazil or whether, you know, it's in Detroit, you know, Vermont or Baltimore, that poor and working class people are struggling around their survival and being able to have the resources needed to live a life with dignity. And so it's going to be really amazing and interesting to hear from someone from Brazil and hear about the organizing that they're doing there and how powerful and you know, the sort of gains that they've made.
So if you extrapolated out what the people in Brazil do when they take over land that's not being used and live on it and then use it and claim it as their own, what would that look like if it happened in Baltimore or Detroit? What would people be doing?
Well, let me give you an example.
It must be Marion Kramer. Go ahead, Marion.
Right in Detroit alone, we got 95,000 parcels of vacant lots and vacant homes standing empty. As of, you know, as some of the figures that came out in the last few months. And they're just standing there. And, you know, people have to understand, as these, if the landlord, being the banks or whoever, move to put you out of these homes that they're foreclosing on, they are making a lot of money from that. From the government is underwriting some of this stuff, as well as if they sell the house, they're getting money on top of that. But what we have to do is move into those. Somebody, I've always told them, you come to evict me. If my house end up going in foreclosure, you better know I'm not leaving. You're going to have to take me out here. And soon you take me out, my husband and I, and we're moving right back in here. But, and, you know, people have to, people have to get in that mind. You cannot take my home without a fight. I'm moving back. Oh, yes, I'm coming to stay in your house. You know, this is criminal what is going on. 95,000 parcels of land that's just waiting. They're letting it sit there for the benefit of these corporations and their developers to come. And the people used to live on that land. We need to be taking it.
And Raymond, what were you about to say about that?
I pretty much was going to say the same thing she said. Like, right now in Baltimore, you have almost 1,000 houses unoccupied.
30,000 houses.
That's basically falling down around themselves. You know what I'm saying? For example, during the time of the month when I was homeless, I occupied one of those houses. You know what I'm saying? Lived in it. You know what I mean? Lived in it for about a couple months. You know? And I think if you want to truly occupy Baltimore, that's what we need to do. All these homeless people that's out here that don't have places to live, you got blocks of houses in Baltimore that the landlords ain't even taking care of. You know, they just let them fall down. Like she said, they tax write on from them and just let them fall. You occupy a whole block, you ain't got homeless people no more. What they going to do? You know what I'm saying? They got to do something with the people. You saying that you don't want them homeless people on your street? Let them occupy some of them empty houses. You got people that's homeless out there that are carpenters, electricians, plumbers. Let them occupy them houses and fix them houses up themselves. You know what I'm saying? That's what you do.
Well, that would be an interesting move. And that would, truly would be an Occupy Baltimore,
yes,
wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
That would not just be Occupy a little corner of Harbor Place.
That would wake them up.
That would be an occupation movement that might actually stir it up some.
Exactly.
So those are lessons from Brazil that maybe Americans can learn.
Exactly.
And when we talk about the Inner Harbor, and development, I mean, what corporations are saying there are that, look, we're putting millions of dollars into these places. We're building entertainment spots that bring in people from all over the world to come here to spend their money in Baltimore City. And part of that's true. And that if we paid, rather than the money, can I say what it was?
$8 an
hour. That, you know, if we paid $15 an hour, plus benefits, or whatever that number would be, $18, $20 an hour, plus benefits, we couldn't manage organizations. We couldn't do it.
I think you can. I think you can because, first of all, if you paying me $15 an hour, I'm going to be happy to work there. I'm going to make sure I do the best job I can do to make sure that this business is successful. You know what I'm saying? But if you only paying me $8 an hour and I'm struggling just to make that $8, I'm going to do a good job, but I'm really not going to do my best job because I know you don't really have no respect for me because of the fact that you only pay me that little bit of money. But if you pay these people enough money to sustain their lives, their health care, you know what I mean, put their children in school, you know what I'm saying, and they don't lose their homes, they'd be happy to come to work every day, $15, $20 an hour, and your business would thrive. You know, I don't see you losing money.
I mean, you know, we talk about the loss of manufacturing jobs and how those jobs were good jobs with living wages and benefits. Well, workers had to organize and they had to fight to make those jobs good jobs.
That's right.
And the jobs at the Inner Harbor are like the new sweatshop factory floor of the 21st century.
Exactly.
So, you know, the way that we're going to, you know, we just need to organize and make those jobs better jobs. The reason why we're in this economic crisis right now is because the real wages of workers have been dropping. And people, you know, as the cost of living has been going up, you know, and productivity has been going up. So these corporations are making, you know, they're making hand over fist, you know, where workers and most people are struggling to meet their basic needs. And so the way that we get out of this is not to continue exploiting people, is to actually respect people's human rights.
Sarah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, I think that we have to reject when they say that's even a valid, you know, a valid way of looking at things. Like we know that they will continue to do business if, mm-hmm. you know, if they can't do business and pay people livable wages, then it's a bad business model in the first place. And we don't want them in our communities, I think, you know. We, here in Vermont, when we were struggling for universal health care, we heard the same thing. We heard corporation after corporation, IBM, which is one of the biggest employers in Vermont, say, you know, if you do this, we're going to leave the state and there's going to be no jobs here. And I think that we have to stop being scared of these corporations that like Ashley said, are making, you know, ridiculous salaries for their, you know, top tier, while they say that there's just not enough money to possibly pay for the things that the workers and regular folks need.
So if you look at what's going to go on Friday, Saturday and Sunday?
Yes. Yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
So what exactly is going to happen? What's going to happen when, let's say, regular citizens of Baltimore want to come and witness this and be part of it, and all these activists and workers from across the country and across the parts of the globe, like Dominican Republic and Brazil are here, what exactly the interactions are going to take place? What are you going to be doing there?
Well, on Friday, we're going to have a big community banquet and the keynote speakers. So Marion's going to be one of the keynote speakers. And then also Janaína Stronzak with the Landless Peoples Movement, and Jan Riemann, who's a professor at Union Theological Seminary. So that will be kind of the welcoming and kind of the framing the event. And then all day Saturday, there's going to be, you know, over 40 organizations participating in workshops and presentations that range from, you know, anti-war issues to universal health care to water shutoffs, mountaintop removal, you know, all these different fronts of struggles are going to be coming together, and really a space for sharing, you know, strategies and solutions to building power in our communities. And then that evening, we're going to have a film screening and dinner that's hosted by the National Economic and Social Rights Initiative. It's a human rights organization that partners with lots of different grassroots groups across the countries, and they're screening this film called More Than a Roof, that is about when the UN, I guess, rapporteur on housing came to the United States to witness kind of the housing crisis in the United States. And so it's kind of a survey of all, you know, from all across the country. And so we're going to screen that film, and then there's going to be a panel of guests from the Take Back the Land movement, from Picture the Homeless. And then Sunday, you know, we're going to focus our attention on the poverty zone that's right in front of us in the Inner Harbor, and we're gonna become poverty busters, and we're gonna blast the human rights abuses out of this dimension. And so it's kind of a Halloween themed action called The Haunted Harbor, a terrifying tale of poverty zone development. So that's gonna be a really fun action and a point where we're kind of taking all this, you know, we're spending Saturday kind of sharing ideas and, you know, exchanging strategies, and then we're going to kind of put that into action on Sunday.
Marion Kramer, let me ask this question as someone I know who has been in the movement for a long time.
I know you. Yeah, I hear you keep saying been in the movement for quite a long time.
Well, but it's true, though, right?
Yeah, it is true. And I have a lot of appreciation for the knowledge that one gains from the movement and what you learn from people, from the experience and, you know, and what you study and all that stuff. It's been hard, but you got to learn to stick and stay, because you got to have a better society. And that's what's keeping me out here.
Well, one of the things that I was going to ask you about that, though, is in seeing this conference take place, a lot of the people at this conference are young or men and women in their 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. A lot are workers who are struggling to make ends meet, like Raymond Scott. So, I mean, where do you think – do you think things are different now than they were in terms of where this particular movement is going and what it says?
That's why I love your program. When you know, let's look at compared when I started. When I started, this country, the system we're living on was, you know, expanding more on the international scene and what have you. You know, and we looked at, we were fighting for our for civil rights at the time, trying to get some decent jobs, still organizing in the union, trying to integrate the communities and that, all that type of stuff. You know, so we were out there and trying to get in some of these jobs. I remember in Detroit, we was trying to get in the factories and all that type of stuff and enjoy some of the benefits from folks' labor, you know, from our labor and folks' past that has passed. Now, today, these young people are facing stuff we've never faced before. Society has never faced before. Technology has advanced production so much that human labor is not even needed to produce. You look at this factory over in Germany. I don't forget the name where it is. Blew my mind. Where you can order your car in the beginning when you think it's a big museum. You can order your car and move right along and see your car being produced. And people are using white gloves, white, those medical coats and stuff like that. And they're using this concept just in time, which I know GM and all the rest of them have used. But it's all magnetic floors, not using workers to transport the various parts of the car. You got these magnetic robots that are moving through the floors, going to the very station, and you have way less workers. You have less workers in there producing than people walking on the sideline watching these cars being produced. We have the opportunity in this country, because of the advancement in technology, to produce enough food for the world just in a county in California. We have enough technology. I'm a paced person that, as old as I am, I have had the opportunity through technology to be saved letting them take out a aneurysm in my head, and they didn't have to cut my head. They went through the main artery, and they call it coiling, the aneurysm, where my sister died from it, not from the new process.
Right. Right.
From her aneurysm 2 months prior to that. Technology has advanced to the point that in Singapore, these huge, at the port, the cranes, they can run three of those cranes that take five people now. It used to take more than five people to unload the boats and all that type of stuff. They can run three cranes out of some building down the street on some monitors and have them unload the cranes without human labor.
So the whole question really comes down, we only have a couple minutes left here.
To the example I'm trying to show you, and I know I've been going too long, is the fact that technology is out here, should be used for the better society, for all of us. And these young people are facing that type of stuff. But yet and still, we're not going to benefit from it until they move and take their rightful role and understand that we got to fight for a better society. Our vision is one that we should not be suffering like we should. And it's not me fighting for my civil rights no more. It's our human rights violation that's being violated out here. And we need to fight for that. And they can emerge.
So we
don't have to wait for no Martin Luther King, who I had respect for, somebody to drop out of the sky. They all got the ability to come together, be collective leaders, and move and have that vision and move society based on our needs.
So, Ashley, I just need to jump into that. Ashley, we're almost out of time here. Ashley, I need to tell people how to do just what Marianne said and get involved. How do they get connected for this weekend?
So they can go to our website, unitedworkers.org, and they can learn all about the conference. It's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You can register online, or you can just come to the event starting at 6 on Friday and register, or Saturday starting at 9, you can register. At 2640 St. Paul Street.
So, folks, first of all, Ashley Alfango, good to have you here. Raymond Scott, pleasure to meet you, brother. Glad you were in the studio.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks so much for being willing to be here. Sarah Weintraub, look forward to meeting you in person when you come down.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, we're excited to be there.
And Marion Kramer, thank you for being with us so well tonight. We'll look forward to seeing you here in Baltimore this weekend.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to getting a big hug from you.
You got it, baby.
All right.
Thank you all for being here. This has been great. And, folks, we'll be covering that conference and bringing more stories back from the conference this weekend. One of our producers is actually actively involved in that conference, so it is a good thing. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Cricket Aronson. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our intern today is Elizabeth Walker. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and get information about our guests and their work, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.